Welcome in to Petty Page and the Cold Taker. I'm the host, Paige DeMacos, here with my co-host, Fred Siegel, otherwise known as Old Takes Exposed. Fred, how are we doing today?
Wonderful. There's so much sports going on.
This is one of the most wonderful times. I love we're right at the beginning of baseball season, but enough in that we're at least paying attention to storylines. We've got NBA and NHL playoffs. They're getting very They've gifted us, mostly the NBA, with so many extraordinary things that are happening off the court, which just make us even more interested in what's going on the court, which makes everything that much better. I'm so entertained by the NBA. I can't even begin to describe my entertainment level.
I love it. I love every night there's a game, there's something going on, and there's always narratives. Yes, I love narratives,
and as the petty queen, the NBA delivers on its pettiness. It is unbelievably petty, and we will start things off here right at the beginning talking about something that happened on Tuesday night that was very NBA, very much hit a storyline, a narrative that continues to be told and continues to be true as of right now. Now, it was game one. And I don't want to overreact, but I'm going to overreact because that was the Toronto Raptors lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers in Toronto in game one in the most epic choke fashion because they literally led the entirety of the game. The only time that they were not leading was in overtime. It was so Toronto that I could not picture a more Toronto version of what happened in game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals, Fred.
Well, I think everything that happened at the end, it was the most Raptors thing, especially what's his name? How do you pronounce his name? Jonas?
Valanciunas.
Yeah. You got Valanciunas, and this guy missed about 10 shots up close that would have probably given the Raptors enough of a cushion to win the game. And by the end of the game, they did everything wrong. And it was so Raptors. That was the most Raptors thing ever. And we say that all the time. That was so this team. Do you know of other situations that we say that was so? Like, can you think of other ones
where
in the past, we said so many. I remember when Tony Romo used to throw an interception in a game. And it was like a big game.
Yeah.
And he throws some stupid interception. Even though Romo was awesome, I'd say that was so Romo.
Yeah.
That was so freaking Romo.
That used to be me. And I got into this weird place where I became a Romo defender. I don't know how that happened, but it was like, the more I watched football, the more I realized like that narrative wasn't necessarily true. And he did. Now, the one part of the so Romo thing that I did dabble in more so was the injury thing, because it did seem like Romo, like constantly, it was just like, you knew when he got hit, you're like, that guy's dead. He's done. Like, it's over. Like, good luck, Cowboys. Like, you're screwed. Like, your team is screwed. Your quarterback's hurt again. And it became that narrative around Romo was, oh, my God, it's so Romo. It's so Tony. And that started back from that kick. I mean, it started from that kick where it wasn't an interception. It was him fumbling the snap. And that's where that started. I mean, that was the beginning of so Romo.
Why was he the holder anyway? It's unbelievable. Because he started as the backup quarterback that season. And the backup quarterback was the holder. Now, the backup quarterback is almost never the holder. It's always the punter.
Yeah, which makes more sense. I don't understand why, in general, but that was the beginning of the so Romo era.
That was so Romo. Yeah, that was so Chiefs. Romo.
So Chiefs
are the I think too. Chiefs are the biggest that was so team in the NFL right now.
Oh,
because when they blew that playoff game, that was the most ridiculous Chiefs thing there is. That was so absurdly Chiefs.
That was so
they
so
blew the playoffs.
It was because they were the biggest favorite of the entirety of the playoffs was that game. They were a huge favorite. Tennessee was a bad football team. And I mean a bad football team all year long. They never looked good, especially heading into the playoffs. It was like, this team basically is not worthy of being here, but because somebody has to come, it's them. And they were there. And in Kansas City, at Arrowhead, I think they're now 1-4. Andy Reid's now 1-4 in the playoffs under the Chiefs. And that's not a great record. It's not so good.
Yeah. That was – And it was so Andy Reid, too.
Yep. Very much.
Yeah, Andy Reid's. The Cubs before they won the World Series.
Yep, for sure.
That Cubs was so Cubs.
The Cubs were, until 2016, that was like the biggest joke. It was the ongoing joke. But now the joke has become the Eagles were in that area too because they hadn't won a Super Bowl. They would kind of get into that area because they hadn't won a Super Bowl. The Cavaliers were in that category as well because you could think back to the Elo shot with
Jordan. Oh, yeah.
You could, all the way back to then, they were in that category. But the most, and this encompasses an entirety of a city, okay? Washington, D.C., as a city, but more specifically, the Capitals and the Nationals are continuously favorites. They will come out, they'll have the best record in baseball, they'll have the best pitching staff, they have Ovechkin, and they will come out with the best odds to win, and they never get it done.
Yeah.
Never.
The Caps look good, but if they lose this series, the Caps will be the Caps' thing.
Oh my God! Just beating Pittsburgh because they always lose to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it literally would be always. You can't even get the adjectives to describe how so Caps that would be.
Oh,
it would be ridiculously Caps.
The Nats are such a
no one even considers that the Nats will win the World Series. It's a known. They're gonna lose.
Yeah, and they
pretty much know
they will go in with 100% the best 1-2 punch in baseball as a pitching staff, and it doesn't matter. Everybody knows. It was last year. The Cubs made the playoffs, and everybody was saying the hangover of the World Series and whatever. And the Cubs went in playing the Nationals. The Nationals had the advantage in game 5 in Washington. I mean, it was bad. It was the Cubs won that series, and it was pinnacle peak Washington Nationals.
Oh yeah, that was so Nats.
So Nats. So
yeah,
Nats.
That was the Nattest thing I've seen.
Yeah.
In all the Nats.
Very Nats. Very Nats. Very Nats.
Yeah, there's so many that were so. We're not even broaching the surface of that was so.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, there was just so many. But you know who won. Who squashed that was so 2 years ago. Villanova basketball.
Oh, yeah.
They were so that was so.
Yep,
that was so Nova. So. They lose in the second round every year.
Yep.
And then they won the title. And now they're the best.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And they won the battle twice. But before that, like 5 years before, that was so Nova. Yeah. So Jay Wright.
Yeah. That's Nova and the Cubs. Same year. Took that narrative, threw it out the window. Can't say it anymore. Mm-hmm, but we still have the gift that keeps on giving in the Chiefs and the Washington Capitals and the Washington Nationals. If you think of any more, you guys should tweet them. To us, because I think these are funny narratives to pay attention to, not for their fan bases, but for everybody else. Celtics, I love this one. This was something that we started on Twitter. You and I went back and forth, and we had some people joining in on the conversation. You have a theory about Tom Izzo. So explain your theory and then bridge the gap between the theory between Tom Izzo and where Brad Stevens is now.
Okay. Well, first of all, there's two things I've noticed about not just Tom Izzo zone, but there's two things I noticed about the Celtics-Sixers series, which is awesome, by the way.
Yes.
Is it the Celtics' excuse leverage level? And that's one of my terms, excuse leverage.
Yeah.
It's at an all-time high.
Yes.
There's nothing better than going into a series or a game with a high level of excuse leverage. And there is nothing bigger than the level that the Celtics have now. They have two of their best players already out. And then when Jaylen Brown was announced out before the game, they have such excuse leverage. It's like playing with house money. They can just, no matter what happened that game, it wouldn't have mattered. The Sixers couldn't even brag. If they killed the Celtics that game, all the Celtics fans would have a legitimate excuse leverage. Oh, Brown was out. Oh, great. You beat us with our. If they lost by one, oh, you barely beat us with our best player, with all our players out.
Yeah.
The Sixers, on the other hand, in reverse, have the lowest excuse leverage rate. They have to beat the Celtics now. They don't
yes,
beat
they
the
do.
Celtics now. They have no excuse. Their excuse leverage rate is so
gonna be bad.
And as a fan, it's terrible to have a low excuse leverage rate.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you don't want to have a low excuse leverage. That's why it's hard for you to reconcile a team's great player getting hurt before the series. Because then, you know, deep down inside within yourself, you know your excuse leverage rate is so low. It's so low.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
It's worst case scenario, honestly. It's worst case scenario for a fan because then at least if you're a Celtics fan, stay with me here. If you're a Celtics fan, and I have one of my good friends, Alex Smolikov, who works at FanRag Sports with me, who's a big Boston guy. And he had no expectations going into this playoffs. He's like, Kyrie's out, Gordon Hayward's out. We win a game, we're happy. Literally, no expectations. So this is best case scenario. This like level of fandom between Boston and the hate between Boston and Philly goes back decades, before I was born. Like this series between these two teams has some bad blood back in the day. And I think for Philadelphia, it is going to be extraordinary levels of horrible for trust the process for Sixers fans. If Boston, for whatever reason, figures out a way to win, I would be embarrassed to be a Philadelphia fan. I would be embarrassed because you are going to be considered, it's going to be an ultimate choke job. It's going to be Toronto level choke almost, because you're playing a team that has literally none of their starters in the first game. Literally none of them. It's going to be bad. It's going to be, you better hope, Philly fans, you better hope that you guys come back and win the series.
The crazy thing is, before the series started, there were many people, and there was an article written, I forgot who wrote it, but it was someone in Philly radio who wrote that he doesn't even want LeBron. He thinks it'll ruin it. Yeah.
Oh, my now, God.
If they lose this series to the Celtics, it's going to be panic mode. We must get LeBron, because they're not going to have confidence that they can win. Go farther without changing the team around and getting some more players, or getting Kai, either one of the big free agents, which will be like Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or LeBron. Yeah. So
that's funny to me. When fan bases say we don't need LeBron, looking at you, LA Lakers fans, I am highly, highly entertained by that. Highly entertained by that.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. But Brad Stevens, is there any coach who is at a higher stock right now than Brad Stevens? He's at the highest stock there is. Everybody adores him. And he's what you call with me. Now, I have a theory called the Tom Izzo zone. Now, the theory's kind of taken a big kind of step back in terms of what's been going on with Izzo, especially because he's lost, especially because of his all the issues surrounding the assaults and the sexual assaults.
Yeah, but in Michigan State.
It hasn't been proven, but there's definitely been allegations that, to the extent that Tom Izzo may have just turned a blind eye to some of it. And it's definitely taken a little bit of a hit on his reputation in terms of being like the best guy, but whether it's fair or not, but Brad Stevens right now is the best. And Tom Izzo, back before they lost in the early rounds, the past 3 years in the tournament, always would make the Final Four. And everything Tom Izzo did, everything he did, no matter what happened, he would get praise. It would be all attributed to him. So if there was a timeout called and a player made a shot, a couple shots after, oh, look at that timeout, Tom Izzo he has it. He got him settled down. He made the shot. If Tom Izzo yelling at his player and then the player starts playing good, oh, look at the motivation by Tom Izzo. Yeah, everything's related to Tom Izzo. Everything that happened was attributed to Tom Izzo, his ability to do that. Brad Stevens is on that level. Like, anything that happens in the game that is even remotely can be related to strategy or just – it's automatically attributed to Stevens. It doesn't matter if Stevens didn't even ask a player to do something and they do it. It doesn't matter if a player just got hot. And I'm not saying, like, Brad Stevens looks great. I'm just saying he's in that zone now. The zone. No. He's one of the highest levels of the zone. And right now he's playing. Yeah. He's certainly playing with house money. He could do whatever he wants for the rest of the playoffs. But the zone could take a hit if they lose with a full healthy team next year. That's where but everything's attributed to him.
He's in a good place right now because of what he is doing without his star players. I think the NBA, Izzo's an interesting case of, it's just bizarre the way he doesn't take flack, because I think in Boston, it's such an incredibly hard place to be a coach and a player. They're very hard on expectations. And next year going into the season, They're going to be a hella expectations. And if Brad Stevens doesn't deliver, you're going to see Boston go peak Boston real fast and turn on their guys, because they turn on people real fast. So I think that's the difference here, I think, between the situations, where I agree with you that he's in this place with the media where he can't do any wrong, because what he's doing is honestly so impressive from a basketball perspective. Like I went with talk to my dad who coaches basketball, and he's like, it's a coaching showcase. Mm-hmm. What he's doing, he is showcasing pure raw team basketball, which doesn't always happen in the NBA with inferior talent, because it's the truth. His team is far inferior as far as talent, especially in that game one, and they just played team basketball. And yes, his players, but from a coaching standpoint, I think it's exceptionally impressive what Brad Stevens is doing. Now let's see what happens next year. I think that's gonna be very interesting.
Right. Well, they'll start nitpicking if there's certain makes certain moves, does certain things. He'll start getting nitpicked if they lose a series.
Oh, yeah.
I love Brad Stevens. I love Brad Stevens. Blah. Yeah, but I mean, why don't you play? Why don't you play Rozier in the second half at all? Like, I don't got. Yeah, that would be like what people would do. I love it.
So Boston.
All right, Paige, let's play Rank the Pettiness. And yes. Petty Paige is the queen of petty on the internet. Yep. She loves petty, and she's a petty enthusiast. And yes. I will talk about a certain situation and that happened in the past week, and you will rank the pettiness. Two nights ago, Terry Rozier, who got into this big battle with Eric Bledsoe back when the series between the Bucks and the Celtics, and Rozier got the best of Bledsoe in that, but they've traded a war of words a lot. Bledsoe said that he didn't know who he was, who Rozier was, and it was all good fun, and they hugged afterwards, and after the series was over. But Rozier walked into the arena Monday night wearing a Drew Bledsoe jersey.
Yes.
Patriots Drew Bledsoe jersey from back, when Bledsoe was the quarterback in the mid-90s. Actually, probably up to 2000, but he came in and wore that jersey, and it was just so petty. Paige, rank the pettiness of the Terry Rozier wearing the Drew Bledsoe jersey.
Okay, so not only did he wear the Bledsoe jersey, but then he wore it post-game and answered questions. And all the questions, even after the incredible game that he had, you bet your ass all the reporters wanted to know about the Bledsoe jersey, okay? Which was incredible, because his quotes, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty close. He was like, "What? Why are you wearing that jersey? Drew Bledsoe. I've never met him, but that's my guy."
Yeah.
I could not stop laughing. His comments about Drew Bledsoe postgame, and then Drew Bledsoe coming over the top and tweeting about the jersey, the whole situation was a 5 for me. Okay. Now, this would have been, if he had done this in game 7, it would have been a Hall of Fame moment. But because he did it afterwards, which, listen, they won game 7. They did it. They, ultimate troll job, ultimate pettiness, giving it to Eric Bledsoe. But can you even imagine if walking into the Garden for game 7, he had the Bledsoe jersey on? I would have lost it. I would have put the picture on my Hall of Fame wall that I'm building at FanRag Sports for the pettiness, and he would have been up there at the top, because that would have been unbelievable. But he still gets a 5. It's just not Hall of Fame worthy. But I was so entertained by this. This is what I'm talking about. This is why I love the NBA. They give us so much entertainment value that has nothing to do with the game. Literally nothing to do with the game. It's so good.
Here's my opinion. I think he was over petty there.
Over petty.
Because
okay.
It was unnecessary. They had already won the series. If he wanted to be petty and he wanted to show some, if he wanted to show some fortitude and put himself on the line, he could have worn it to game 7. But instead, he already waited till they won. The series was over. He got the best of him. That was it. Now he's going afterwards. It's not even a fair fight. He's over petty, in my opinion. I think it's an over petty move.
I get where you're coming from, but if somebody disrespected me in the way that Eric Bledsoe did by saying who the F is Terry Rozier, and somebody said knowing who you are, that was so disrespectful that honestly, I'm okay if he wears a freaking Bledsoe jersey every day.
That would be
for the rest of this.
That
series.
Would be way over petty.
And I would be here.
No, you would. I think you would diminish the score. I mean, because it's like
the score over
you get one shot. That's it. You one shot, one post game shot. That's it. And then you get no more.
He's moved on. I think. I don't think we're going to see anything more about Bledsoe.
There was a great exchange yesterday with Cleveland pitcher Trevor Bauer, who always is on Twitter always arguing with people and saying things that people don't like. And there was an exchange where somebody essentially accused the Astros of cheating. And Trevor Bauer replied in some way that kind of seemed to infer that the Astros were doing something to help the spin rate of the ball. And so I'm not going to get into it. If you want to look it up, go look it up. It's not really that important in terms of what we're talking about. But Bauer, then Lance McCullers wrote something to, and he's a pitcher for the Astros, wrote something to Bauer. And then Alex Bregman replied to Trevor Bauer's comment about the Astros helping their spin rate by using something to doctor the ball, which he inferred. And Alex Bregman wrote, well, those World Series balls require more spin, or something along those lines.
Love it.
And then said afterwards, here's what he said. He said, relax, Tyler. Those World Series balls spin a little different. So he called him Tyler Bauer. Now, somebody changed Trevor Bauer's Wikipedia page to say Tyler Bauer. So that added something to it. Then Trevor Bauer gave a statement. He was backed off of it, the whole controversy today, and then changed his Twitter name to Trevor, quote, Tyler Bauer. MLB Twitter is trying to get up there in pettiness to NBA Twitter. And I mean, they did a good job here. I mean, they had a lot more to do, but Petty Page ranked the pettiness of Tyler Bauer and Alex Bregman.
So they're two separate situations here. So Bregman to me is more entertaining. I'm more entertained by, I'm looking at Bregman's tweet right now. And on top of that, I'm going to add to the fact that his Twitter profile picture is a back-to-back picture of Drake following their comments that they were going to go back to back this year, calling their shot they're going to win another title. I just now saw this and I'm highly there for that. I am now even more invested in this situation now that I saw the back to back as his Twitter profile picture after their comments that they were going to do that at the beginning of the season during spring training. Bregman, first of all, calling him a different name, okay, calling him relax Tyler .. Those World Series balls spin a little different. I'm looking at this. This is a 4. It's not a 5. It's high for me. It's very good. I'm very entertained by it. But at the same time, the Indians were in the World Series not that long ago. I know they didn't win, but this would be better if the Astros had a little bit more beef. You know, if it was the Yankees, I would be more entertained by it, I think, because there's kind of this little rivalry brewing between the Yankees and the Astros. So I give it a 4, not a 5. It's still good, but it's not perfect by any means. So it's not a 5. It's not quite at that level. Now, Trevor, on the other hand, or Tyler, as we're calling him these days, he is, to me, like a scorn lover here, okay? Because he is upset and whining and fighting on Twitter. And this is, if you know anything about Trevor Bauer, I worked and covered the Arizona Diamondbacks when Trevor Bauer was pitching in Arizona, okay? He is a whiny little baby. Okay? this is peak Trevor, okay? He whines all the time. He's whined his entire career. And this is just the latest and greatest in his whiny freaking behavior. So I am scoring him a 2, And I'm putting him very low on the pettiness ranking because this is personal between me and Trevor. And Trevor, dude, stop fighting with every person on Twitter. Like, get over yourself. You're a millionaire. You play baseball. Stop making excuses for teams losing. Like, it's not even petty. It's just whiny at this point. And I'm over it. I'm over Trevor. I'm out on Trevor.
First of all, the replying and mentioning the spin rate on the same feed where someone accused the Astros of doing it was not good on his part. That was not good. He did say, I like his save. I like how he called himself Tyler Bauer. Drew attention to himself. That's an A-plus move on his part in terms of damage control.
That's the
control.
Only reason he didn't get a zero. Damage
control. That was good damage control by Bauer. But I think in a couple weeks, Cleveland's going to Houston. So keep your eye on that.
Must watch TV. Must watch TV.
All right, one more. The Celtics fans were chanting, "He's a rookie," while Jason Tatum was at the foul line, talking about their player, the rookie Jason Tatum, who's in his first season with the Celtics. And obviously they're referring to Ben Simmons, who looks like he's going to win the Rookie of the Year award, even though it is his second season with the Sixers, although it is the first season in which he has actually played. And the big argument is between him and Donovan Mitchell as to who is in fact a rookie or whether Ben Simmons even qualifies for the award. It was, I thought this was good. This was a good cheer for the Celtics fans. Petty Page, rank the pettiness.
Okay, so I have to add into the fact that they were chanting at Jason Tatum. They were also chanting at Ben Simmons. The Boston legit delivers on everything that they do. Okay, Boston like Chicago very much here for their pettiness. I would not give this a 5 because it's not perfect, but I will give it a 4. I was watching the game and I had to listen. I was like, oh no, they are not doing that. And I was like, oh no, they're doing it. They're going all in. They're chanting, "He's a rookie." I was dying of laughter. And from a pure entertainment point, that's how I rank these. Just what are you bringing to my entertainment? And my entertainment value here was very high. So I'm in for the "He's a rookie" chant. I hope that Boston brings it to their A game and brings something else to the table for the next game. I'm highly entertained. I'm highly entertained by what Boston's doing. So I'm here for it. Let's go, Boston. I'm team Boston. Sorry, Philly.
I like it.
I'm all the way in.
You're
now,
team Boston.
Now it's your turn.
Yeah.
I'm team Boston. You know why I'm team Boston? Okay, first and foremost, yes, I am on the hype train. Call me bandwagon, whatever. My team's the Bulls. They're not playing in it, so I'm cheering for storylines and I'm cheering for narratives. I do not make this a secret. Okay. Ever since I became friends with Fred, I cheer for Fred. Okay? I cheer for storylines. I cheer for narratives. I cheer for old takes. I cheer for everything that's going to create good content for this podcast. Yeah. And that is, the more ridiculous and stupid things get, the better it is for us. Okay. So that's what I cheer for. When it's not my team, I'm out. I don't care. My team's not in it. So I cheer for the ridiculousness. If Philadelphia loses to Boston, it is going to be unbelievable on social media. And I am here for Joel Embiid eating crow. I am here for Ben Simmons eating crow. I'm here for everybody in the whole city of Philadelphia having their dreams crushed after they think that this is like Philly's year, right? They have the Eagles. They had Villanova. They're like all in on this is Philly's year. And nothing would be funnier to me than watching that get squashed. Now, all that being said, I still pick the Sixers to win the series in 6. Now, we'll see what happens. If they go down 2-0, that's not a good sign for this team. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics didn't look good on the road in the first series. So, it doesn't seem like it would be a great bet to bet them on the road.
No, but if the home teams win every game, that bodes well for the Celtics. Yep. So it could be very much like the last series where every home team wins the game. Yep. And unfortunately for the Sixers, they're going to find themselves in a game 7 in the Garden, and in which case I will take Boston. So, Fred, now is your turn, okay? Now we do the loaded vaults, okay? We got rank the pettiness for Paige. We got loaded vaults for Fred. Loaded vaults, all of the things that I was just talking about, these are the things I cheer for. I cheer for Fred to have loaded vaults so that he's got tweets, on tweets to unleash on people. So let's talk about what loaded vaults are you working on right now? What do you got?
Well, my loaded vaults where, you know, I've accumulated a specific amount of tweets that if this particular incident in which is being touted in the tweets does not happen, then I can unleash them. And the Celtics, the next 2-3 years, it especially after the way that they won game one, oh my God, the Celtics are going to be so good the next 2-3 years. I think Cowherd said they're winning the NBA championship next year. Yeah, sure yeah. Did. So, I mean, everybody's on the Celtics. If the Celtics lose,
yes.
The Celtics don't make it to the finals next year, and maybe the next 2 years. Yeah, that's something that is something to keep an eye on because they are – there's stock for the future, not for this season and this playoffs, but their stock for the future is at a real, real, real high. And, of course – the Rockets and the Warriors are pegged in for the finals. That's probably going to happen, but they both play at home.
Yeah.
And the Rockets are tonight playing at home. If the Rockets and the Warriors don't make the finals or the conference finals, then that'll be great. I mean, it wouldn't be great because I want to see the Rockets versus the Warriors. But I have a lot of material.
Yes, I
have a lot of material there.
You'd have a lot of material. Unfortunately, I do not. I am in the I would get old taked because there is I would put it at a 2% chance that does not happen. And the only way that happens is if James Harden gets Ebola and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant get shipped to a foreign planet. I don't see a scenario in which
another one too. Paul George, if he goes back to Oklahoma City. I mean, I can write a
treat
of that. Nobody
Need
thinks
it.
He's coming back to Oklahoma City.
Which makes me think he's going
back to Oklahoma City. I don't see it. But I think that would be – actually, that would be the biggest – of course, LeBron going back to Cleveland too. Would be something that
– That one's one we're going to pay close attention to.
Yeah.
We're gonna keep a close eye on that one because I think it's gonna be very. I think if LeBron loses before getting to the NBA Finals, that's gonna be peak. LeBron is leaving. Like so many takes, all of the takes. There's gonna be so many of them. I'm so excited. I need all.
Yeah, I need all the takes.
Fred, I would say it's time for off your chest, and I'm gonna let you go first here. You got a minute to talk about what is on your mind, my friend. So go ahead.
All right. I'm going to get something off my chest right now because what happened yesterday, and actually it was last night, early hours of the morning, I posted a tweet of somebody from back when Steve Kerr was hired by the Warriors, and it said that Warriors are so dumb for not hiring Stan Van Gundy and hiring Steve Kerr. And I posted it, and I got 15 replies that say, oh, well, this isn't a cold take because, you know, Stan Van Gundy would have definitely won with all those players too. Anybody can win with all those players. Anybody can win.
Okay.
I hate that. I think it's the dumbest shit ever when people say that. You know, I know why? Mm-hmm. Because we don't know if they would win. It's such lazy crap. Nope. You just assume that they would win because they have a lot of great players. It's automatic that you can't argue against them because we don't know. There's no argument there. And then you create it for yourself as if it's a fact. And it's a bunch of bullshit. Yeah. And it is a cold take because Kerr did win 2 championships with them. And it wasn't stupid or foolish for them not to go after Stan Van Gundy. And that's it. We don't know what the other coaches would have done. And then the other – there was someone there saying all the credit goes to Mark Jackson, who was the coach prior to it. But that doesn't make any sense. I mean, like – I'm a lawyer, and you what you do is you kind of put together. There has to be some sort of evidence to make an inference that something would be true. In your assumption would be true if you're going to make assumptions. And you know, Mark Jackson, where did they go? 51-31, or something along those lines in 2014, and they got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, and then the Warriors won the championship the next year. Where and they had pretty much the exact same team the next season. What in that particular what about Mark Jackson's, the way he performed with that team, allowed you to 100% believe that he would have done the same thing as Kerr? Now, he may have done it, but why? How could you believe it 100%? It doesn't make any sense. Everybody does this. It's the laziest shit ever. Oh, well, anybody could have won with those teams. No, I don't. We don't know that. We have no fucking clue if that's the case. None.
No,
it's
no,
bullshit.
We don't. No, we don't.
And then some people say Stan Van would have won Game 7 against the Cavs. Who the fuck knows if they would even got to Game 7 with the Cavs if Stan Van was the coach? We have no idea. Stan Van Gundy seems to flame out everywhere he goes. Why in the world wouldn't he flame out in Golden State? That's the evidence you should look at. Now, he could have done it with all these players, but fuck off with that analysis. I hate it. It's such a bunch of bullshit.
Okay. No, it's – Fred, this one really got you heated. I can tell. I can tell. And first of all, that's literally the definition of a cold take. Like, what happened? That's literally the definition of a cold take. Because let me remind you that in the 2013-2014 season, Mark Jackson lost to the Clippers, who also could show up in the beginning of this podcast as a "that's so Clippers" because they have the reputation for losing, especially back then. The Clippers were the team that bounced that Golden State team early on. Then the following year in 2014, they swept the Pelicans. They went 4-2 against the Grizzlies. They went 4-1 against the Rockets. And then they beat the Cavs in the finals. So you tell me how that is not the definition of why you would look at that and go, yeah, Mark Jackson got bounced in the first round against a Clippers team who never has postseason success. And then you're going to say, oh yeah, but Steve Kerr shouldn't get any of the credit for what he did in one season for that team. That doesn't make, I'm totally with you on this one. I think the reality is, look at the player that Steph Curry has become under Steve Kerr's guidance, and come talk to me about whether or not anybody could win with that team. Okay, that's a ridiculous argument. You have no proof. In fact I have proof to prove you wrong, in fact, because literally Mark Jackson could not win with that team. So what? I don't,
that's the only proof we have. We don't have any other proof. How do you make your assumption out of that? It makes no sense.
The only proof we have is proof to make an argument that you are that fan is wrong, that you are factual, that is incorrect. That team not only did not win, that team lost to the Clippers in the first round, and then the very next season with the exact same team had no trouble going all the way through the playoffs and won a championship. Come on now. That's ridiculous.
You or I can coach that team. My mother can coach that team. You fuck off.
Yeah, okay. Okay, go. Please watch. Obviously, you just started watching basketball because you haven't watched the progression of what the player that Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green became underneath the guidance of Steve Kerr and his coaching staff. And also the fact that Luke Walton left and has a head coaching job now because of what happened with Steve Kerr and that team. So F off. I don't even want to hear about it. My argument, my thing here is with the media and with the fans. Every single time LeBron does something, anything, we have to compare him to Michael Jordan, and it's driving me absolutely insane. Because yesterday, on Tuesday afternoon, I saw a stat graphic in which Colin Cowherd was going, and and Colin follows me, and I love Colin as a person, but the dude, honestly, he is the driver of this, because he doesn't know what else to talk about if he doesn't talk about this. Like, I would love to outlaw that conversation and see what topics they have to talk about, because this is what they talk about every day, legitimately every day. LeBron, the statistic that he was comparing LeBron with was LeBron's stats in a first round series against the Indiana Pacers, who have one all-star on their team, to the time where Michael Jordan played in the finals against two of the best players of all time in Karl Malone and John Stockton. He was comparing stats from a finals series to a first round series. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching this and I'm looking at the graphic and I'm going, this has to be wrong. Like, they couldn't have done this on purpose. They're not actually comparing first round to final round series. They can't be doing this. Oh no, they did an entire segment about it. So this is my off my chest. Listen, I love LeBron. LeBron's a great person. He's a great basketball player. Okay. And everybody knows I'm from Chicago. I love MJ. There is nothing that drives me more insane than not being able to just appreciate what is going on in the moment with LeBron and having to compare every single moment that LeBron has to something Michael Jordan did. Because guess what? They're two completely different players. They played in completely different eras against completely different competition. And you, as much like the guy who Fred talked about, you have no proof and you have no stats that you can prove your argument. You cannot prove that it's better competition. You cannot prove that they were better teams. That isn't an opinion, not a fact. So please stop with all of your opinions. Please stop comparing every single thing that Michael did to LeBron. And if you are going to compare them, at least, for the love of fucking God, pick something that is at least remotely the same, not a final series against two of the greatest basketball players of all time to an Indiana Pacers team who featured Lance Stephenson. I'm out.
Nothing gets you going more than this LeBron Michael stuff. I hate it.
It's all the time. It's Fred. It's every day. It's literally every day.
It's literally going to be it's by far the number one most endless sports conversation there ever is. Yes. It'll never end.
No.
The conversation will never end. Well, until someone else comes that does what LeBron did. And that person will be compared to LeBron and Michael. Yeah,
it's the ongoing saga that I'm just like, can we talk about something else? Do you guys have any, other thoughts? Do you think about anything else on a daily basis other than this conversation? Cause I would be shocked.
People like it or else they wouldn't talk about it. For some reason, there are a bunch of people it. I don't know who it is, but it's not me.
I don't know who it is. Cause most people on the internet that I talk to are tired of hearing about it. So I think, to my point, the Fox should look at their most recent ratings and tell me about how many people are paying attention to what they're talking about. So
the card.
That's my last petty shot of the day. So you end the podcast with Fans with Sources, because this is quickly becoming my favorite thing that we do on the podcast.
Fans with Sources. You know that we have these fans and they come out and they have their own sources. They hear from their friend's brother. And what they do is they tell the people who actually do work and try to get legitimate sources and break legitimate news that they're wrong. And they report their own sources. And they end up usually being wrong. And it's hilarious. And it happened to an individual who calls himself on Twitter, Matty Fresh. Yeah, it looks like he's a Browns fan. He was in right before the draft last Thursday night. He went into NFL.com analyst Lance Zierlein. He went into his DMs before the draft, and he berated Lance. Matty Fresh berated Lance for saying that the Browns would pick Mayfield number one overall, Baker Mayfield, and they did pick Baker Mayfield number one overall. He wrote in Lance Zierlein's DMs, which was published by Lance, can tell you for 100% all caps fact, the Browns are not considering taking Baker Mayfield at one. I'll be more happy to share such proof, but it would cost you, at a minimum, giving national credit to a random person on Twitter who happens to all quote know who the actual pick with no K, spelled like a picture, is, when 99% of national writers don't. Again, all caps fact. The Browns are not taking or even actually considering taking him number one. The reasoning, what's good actually going on, is Sam Darnold is the Browns' pick, according to Matty Fresh. Sam Darnold has been informed that the Browns plan to pick him within the last 15 minutes. This was right before the draft. And he was asked to, quote, act shocked when he gets the official call.
Oh, my God.
Typo. Should be good, but goof. That's a Freudian slip. Friend. Directly involved with the Browns. They also decided on Sam over 10 days ago. Okay. So Mayfield was ended up being selected right after this rant. And according to Matty Fresh, he owned it. He made a statement on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
He made a dumb decision to use a contact via text that he did not confirm via actual conversation. ear to ear and try to get a story. It was a poor decision to label that contact a good friend, which he has acknowledged was not the correct context. Bash him. No problem, exclamation point. So he took it and he elaborated. What's a grown man to do? Run from Twitter? Isn't fair or unfair when it comes to social media? You say something which thousands and maybe millions of people will see, it ends up backfiring. You have to take your lashing. He hasn't run from anything a day in his life. Matty Fresh has not run from anything a day in his life, and he will not run from this. Kudos to Matty Fresh for taking his lashing. But his goof friend let him down this time.
So I just did a quick Twitter search for LED underscore Matt, and it doesn't seem that his Twitter
there's a different one. I think it could be it could be he has a different account. It's not LED Matt.
Okay.
It's something else.
Okay.
It's something.
Okay. Because I was wondering if this made him delete.
No. Twitter. No.
I was wondering. I was like, wow.
Oh, if that's the case, then he didn't take his lashing.
Wow. Well, dear fans with sources, this is my end to the podcast every week since we started this. Maybe someday you will learn that whoever you think is a source is probably not, and you are probably getting taken by insert random fan that is telling you something that is completely incorrect, and even real reporters who have worked in this industry for a very long time, including myself, I got sent, I would say, upwards of 15 to 20 different things about the draft. And of those 20 things, two of them actually happened. Okay?
And they're probably the obvious ones.
They were obvious, okay? Or at least close to, including some of the things mostly related to what the Browns were going to do, in which case scouts, reporters, coaches, players were all over the place, okay? All over the map, including there is now, because of what happened with Baker Mayfield, a reporter in Cleveland who is going to have to eat horse poop because Baker Mayfield was picked first overall. So do not be that guy. Do not be the guy who has to end up in Fans with Sources, okay? So let's just make sure that you don't tweet, don't be doing this, okay? Don't be doing this. But if you do, if your friend is this person, you should tweet at me and Fred at Old Takes Exposed at the underscore sports page with the hashtag Friends with Sources, Fans with Sources, okay? So that way we can talk about these people on our podcast. That's my ending to the podcast. Fred, do you have any final
thoughts? No, just give us some Fans with Sources. Talk about petty incidents and make sure to inform us if anything comes up related to any loaded vaults.
Yeah. Guys, be sure to follow this podcast. You can look it up on iTunes by searching for Petty Page and the Cold Taker. Leave us a review. We've gotten a lot over the last few days. I'm super thankful for everybody that's listening to the pod and giving us reviews. It's awesome. I'm going to have Petty Page t-shirts soon, and I think I'm going to start giving some away to some people that are giving us some awesome reviews. So thanks for that. Everybody, you should follow Fred on Twitter and Instagram. How can they do that, Fred?
So at Old Takes Expose on Twitter, and then Instagram, Freezing Cold Takes.
Yep. Be sure to do that. Give him a like on Facebook as well. And guys, you can follow me at the underscore sports page with an I on Twitter, and the sports page all the way through on Instagram. Fred, thanks so much. We'll be back next Wednesday, and keep the petty coming.
Yeah, for sure.